Hello, friends and listeners of the LeaderCast podcast. This is Mo, the producer, jumping on really quick before this episode starts to let you know that we are going to be wrapping up season one of the podcast. The final episode in season one will be coming out on April 23rd. We are going to be coming back with an even better season two later this year. Stay tuned on our socials for updates as we know more, and thank you for being an avid listener.
You have to continuously show that you're somebody that not only asks for the feedback, but like wants to hear it and have a dialogue on it. And then you got to do better. You have to do better.
Welcome to the LeaderCast podcast, a weekly deep dive into the stories that transformed our guests into leaders worth following. I'm your host, Joe Boyd. If you've been enjoying the podcast, thank you so much for being a listener. One simple thing you can do to help us out is leave a review wherever you listen. Today's guest is the Chief Human Resource Officer at Paycor. She's also my friend, Paris Parker. She's been a contributor on the LeaderCast platform for many years. You're going to love our conversation, especially around remote working. Hi, Paris Parker.
Hey, Joe Boyd. What's up?
Welcome to the LeaderCast podcast. So exciting.
So pumped to be here.
I love doing this because it's such a mix of people I'm meeting for the very first time and then like friends. So you're the latter. You're a friend. And it's
I was going to say that's going to be feedback if you're like, nice to meet you.
Yeah. How do you spell your name again? We've worked together in like various creative ways through the years and have become friends and share. We both live in Cincinnati, so we even bump into each other sometimes. I would have you on no matter what, because you, in my mind, are a world-class leader, and I'm excited to talk to you today.
Thanks.
You are the Chief Human Resource Officer at Paycor. Could you tell us, I want to dive into kind of how you got here, but could you just tell the folks a little bit about what you do and what Paycor does?
Yeah, so Paycor is awesome. It's a HCM company, and we really specialize in technology that enables and enhances leaders' ability to empower their leaders to build winning teams, which I think is really cool. So think about everything from payroll, talent acquisition, talent development, signing up for benefits. So everything from things that used to be like the, oh, this is the stuff an HR system has to do, to the way that we've really transitioned and transformed how companies think about human beings.
Yeah.
And our technology really helps to take out some of those tasks that can take leaders away from the human and shine a lot of light on the types of conversations and plans that can enhance people's ability to really perform at work.
Yeah. So what you kind of have a double, so you're the HR person for the folks that work for Paycor. And you have a team under you there. Would you have been surprised, say, when you were in college that you have this job, or was it kind of what you were thinking you might?
I mean, I went to school to be a child psychologist.
Yeah.
So I would say 100% yes, would have been surprised. But I like feel like I was meant to be here and to like do this work.
What was the defining moment that turned you from psychology to human resources? I actually see quite a connection, but
there is quite a connection. However, it was a fairly blunt very blunt turn. I had a professor that I loved who pulled me aside one day and was like, I think you got to think about something different. And I had built my whole plan around, you know, you're going to do undergrad, then you're going to go to grad school. And he basically said that he felt like the thing that he thought would make me a really great child psychologist would not do me any probably positively or good in my life outside of work. And he felt quite strongly about it. And I remember being so upset after class that day, because I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do now. And it wasn't like I wasn't failing. It didn't have anything to do academically. But I'm so thankful for him caring enough to say, hey, you would be really good at this, but I also care enough about you for you to want you to have like a life outside of being a child psychologist, defining, you know, all your highs and lows.
That's such a like, I don't know. Like, so one of the themes of the podcast is I talk about leaders' journeys is they will have like one person that may not be even super close to them that says something at a pivotal moment in their life that changes their direction. But don't take this the wrong way. It's usually always like positive. it's usually like, I see this in you. You should do this. And they're like, yes. It's really fascinating that this person cared enough and knew you well enough as a professor to say that, because it probably wasn't an easy thing for them to say either, I wouldn't think.
No. And you know what? So he just was like super blunt. And I wouldn't say that he was probably one of the professors that I liked the most.
Yeah.
But not necessarily like the professor that I felt like I was the closest to.
Yeah,
right. Like
yeah.
We had a good relationship. The interesting part is though, I get really triggered when people ask me questions like, you know, how do you give somebody tough feedback? Or like, why is it important to have courageous conversations?
Yeah.
And I think you've heard me say this before, but yeah. I'm like, the least courageous thing you can do is like nothing, right? And we put all this, I don't know, I feel like we bubble wrap with anxiety telling people the truth.
Yeah.
And I've been reflecting a lot. I reflect all the time. But I think because he showed me how much greatness can happen if you're just honest with someone, it forever changed how I thought about the word feedback or like tough conversations. And, you know, I like to joke, but if you were sitting in front of me right now and had spinach in your teeth and we got done with this podcast and you went to the bathroom, you'd probably be like cussing me out. Like, why didn't she tell that I just sat here this whole time with food in my mouth? And I feel like that's the same thing at work. If somebody's not doing something they're supposed to be doing, if somebody's not showing up in a way that you think they want to be showing up and you don't tell them, I think you're a jerk for not telling them, because I don't think that person would be doing it just for like the sake of doing it.
There's like a small sliver of the conversation that loves upsetting people, right? And most of us don't like it. I think a lot of us are afraid to be put into that small lump of people that are just kind of jerks. And so we wait too long to give feedback sometimes because of that, probably.
Yeah. And then we've done the person like no service because we could have been a part of their journey to like right size or take a different turn. And now we've kind of like shoved them in a corner of like, now you got to do something now or it's going to be really bad. And I would rather someone tell me that when I have spinach in my teeth than like when my teeth are rotting and falling out of like, oh yeah, I saw that coming. And I just, you know, I didn't care enough about you to mention it, but now this kind of feels like a problem.
Plus less dental bills in the end.
Also that.
Yeah. How did that news end up settling with you over the next few days? What did you do about it?
Yeah, I had already started working for Victoria's Secret, but it was like, you know, a job that started off as a summer job. And after he told me what he said, I really started thinking about why I was getting noticed at work. And what I realized, to your earlier point on like child psychology and HR is kind of the same. I realized that because of, I think, my schooling and how I was raised and my personality, I had a knack for like connecting with people and getting them to like do stuff and kind of have fun while they were doing it. And because of that, we had good results. And through sales, you know, I learned not only how to impact people that worked on my team, but like watching women walk out of a store feeling really great about themselves. That's pretty stellar to have those experiences from the time that you're like 18 to 21.
Yeah.
It's so formidable in seeing the type of impact you can have on somebody by doing this like mundane job that you thought you were doing to pay the bills, and it turns into, you know, where you're at 22 years later.
You said the word fun, which is a word I think I would use to describe you and the professional version of you as well. Like we've gotten to do work together and you do have a way, I feel like, of look, maybe some folks, if you just walked up and asked them and said, is HR a fun job? A lot of people might say, I don't know. But I feel like you have incorporated sort of, humanity for sure, but also kind of having fun into your work. And I'm curious, is that, do you self-identify that in you? And is that purposeful? How do you walk?
I mean, I definitely like that F word better than like another and any other F word that could be used.
Yeah.
I think so, because if you really think about the psychology, right, of what gets people going, it's not fun. Like, right. Nobody wants to come to work and feel like they don't know what they're doing. They don't know how to do what they're supposed to be doing. They're constantly being told that they're doing something wrong. Like, that doesn't feel like an environment where you could do, your best. Mm-hmm. And I think like things like truth, and things like helping somebody see, hey, this quarter, these are like the five things that you have to get done. Now let's talk about how are you going to do them, and then not let them just like fly for the whole quarter and come back and be like, surprise, all that was wrong, right? So I think being a partner with folks along the way is a ton of fun. And I think the outcome that you get from it is that they see what they can accomplish, how they can accomplish it. Before you know it, your team is winning. I don't know about you, but like winning is super fun.
Yeah.
And I think if more people see how much a part of a role they play, regardless of what their day-to-day job is, and accomplishing goals and having fun, that's what human resources is all about. It's about the humans, not about like, you know, as you can imagine, because you know, the team that I work with is, you know, compete to win and have fun along the way are two of our guiding principles.
Yeah.
And while we live a lot of them really well, we definitely live those too well. And we have conversations, like sometimes you're just asking for silly things. And my feedback normally is like, you shouldn't even be coming to HR with those. Like, I know you're smart enough to know like what's okay and what's not okay. Like, that's not the type of HR I'm interested in doing.
Yeah.
What I would love is for like you to feel really empowered to make those decisions and be able to think through things that are risky, or think through things that are worth taking the risk, or think about what's a respectful way to have that conversation with somebody. I think that's a ton of fun.
Developing world-class leaders in your community is now easier than ever with LeaderCast. In addition to our flagship May event, becoming a presenting partner allows you to stream multiple events per year, each with an opportunity to earn money. The new LeaderCast lets you invite 1 to 1,000 people with unlimited streaming opportunities. Check out more at LeaderCast.com or the link in our bio. Cool. So we have a ton of HR professionals that are part of the LeaderCast community. And I was thinking through maybe some specific questions that they might be asking. I'm trying to read their minds. But first of all, before you answer, maybe you could just go through a little bit of your history, because I know you've been at several larger companies. But I want to ask a question about kind of leading up a little bit. So like the CEO or whoever you might report into, or if you're on the HR team and there's someone in your position above you. Curious, just your advice in the HR world about how to kind of lead that way. But before you answer that, it's a really – this is an awful question. This isn't my main job asking questions, but tell us a little bit of your career path and then tell us about leading up and how you feel about that.
Yeah, sure. So quickly, I mean, I started off in sales. Like, I started working at Victoria's Secret this summer after my freshman year in college and needed a summer job. I wanted to work a lot. So I worked 40 hours a week and I got good at it. I got good at selling stuff. I got good at working with my coworkers. And so sales led to very quickly management positions. And that was Victoria's Secret unplanned was like a big moment for me, because that is where I learned about business, how businesses make money, how businesses make money through products, through people, through supply chain, how you flex different controllable aspects of your business based on the money that's coming in. Mm-hmm. And I always say, like, I'm going to be forever young. But to be clear, like, these were the days we were like writing down our sales hour by hour on this gigantic piece of like ledger paper. Mm-hmm. And so it taught me math in new ways. There's just so much like business and financial acumen I learned as an 18-year-old that probably would have taken me years and years, right? To learn from spending lots of time in sales and management and, you know, running stores in that way. I got into the learning and development and like the coaching aspect of the world at Victoria's Secret, and I loved it. And that's what made me start thinking like, oh, I want to do, I need to try to figure out how to go do that.
Yeah.
I worked for US Bank for a little bit, which was selling things, but like very different from what I was selling at Victoria's Secret. Now you were selling a different kind of sense of security, peace of mind. So different product, working with business owners. And then I had the opportunity to go into management consulting. And I think that was just another pivotal moment of working in the diversity, equity, and inclusion space before it was even called that. Back then, it was just called diversity and inclusion. And people did it because it was the right thing to do, which I have lots of feelings about that. But that's how, you know, that's how it got started. And there I learned how to sell like really expensive stuff to companies to help make their companies better. My first job in HR, like in an actual HR function, wasn't until I started working at Macy's, which was more than, you know, 10, 12 years into my career outside of outside of college. So, you know, from Macy's, then I had an opportunity to go to another retailer, Kroger, but I got to Kroger through 8451 because I wanted to learn more about data science and engineering, and voila, now I get to do HR work for an HR tech company. Like I don't know that that journey could have been drawn out better had I actually planned it. It's really cool to see like all the steps now though. And that's why I always say I'm really humbled because I know that I did a lot of hard work to earn things. I've also been, you know, really, really blessed with some really awesome people that have been huge supporters in me getting here.
Cool. So the leading up question, when you find yourself wanting to influence, say, your CEO, or when you were on an HR team, but you had an HR professional above you, where does your mind go when you think, how do I influence the organization?
Yeah, you know, especially for other CHROs, I'd actually love to know if they agree or disagree. But like your job as a CHRO, in addition to the day to day, is you have to be the most trusted advisor to your CEO. He, she, they, however they identify, have to see you as somebody that they can tell anything to, trust to do the right thing, trust to push back on them if they're thinking about a decision in a way that they maybe need to like zoom out or slow down or take a bit of emotion out of it. And I don't think chief people or HR officers and CEOs can do their best work or do right by the company if those two people don't actually like trust each other, get along, believe in one another. And I think you have to spend time quickly doing that with your CEO, and then the influence and the change management and all that stuff is a byproduct to me of that comfortable and trusting relationship. So when big crazy things happen, I have to be able to trust that like I know the intent of why my CEO is doing something, and he has to be able to trust if I'm like time out or if I'm like, yeah, let's get after it on full speed. That we're doing the things that we're doing for the right reasons. And you don't get there just in like a textbook.
Yeah.
You don't get there because you just textbook know what to do. I think that's also really important if you're a peer, if you're a peer leader or a leader of others, you have to start by building comfort and trust. Yeah. It's much easier to influence people. It's much easier to encourage folks to do something better differently when they trust you than it is because you hierarchically are trying to like get them to do something different.
Any specific, maybe from your past, has like a CEO or someone done any involved you in a certain way that maybe wouldn't be the normal way you might involve an HR person? You know what I mean? Like, have you been in?
Yes. Yeah. But here's the thing. And actually, you know, a lot of the CEOs that I've worked with, and I can look you in the face and hopefully they'll watch this. And I think they would agree. I have loved, like I have truly loved, respected, appreciated all of my previous bosses. And I know there are a ton of people that sit in my seat or seats like mine that don't have that experience. And so I can think about that in two ways. I've been really lucky for 20 some odd years, or I've been really lucky in that those folks have been willing to also like get to know me and have a relationship and, you know, do some of my stupid exercises of like, hey, we're going to like talk to each other a little bit before we just go into one-on-one stuff to get there. And so, yes, I can think of tons of examples where it's been unique, but I think it's not necessarily been unique for me because I've had the opportunity to have that, but I do think it's a unique qualifier. I'll give you a couple ones. Like I get to work on deals that have like nothing to do with HR, that have nothing to do with products that we're selling, that are special projects of, hey, it would just be cool to have your brain at the table.
Yeah.
And I think those experiences are so unique because my leaders show me that they trust me to do more than like this line of work.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just stay in this swim lane and don't talk to anybody else about other stuff. And I think that's really unique because what it's taught me is the importance of now creating space for other people to do that. And going into those special projects with a ton of trust of like, hey, you tell me what you're comfortable with, but I'm going to show you all the things.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about how you want to get feedback, good, bad, and indifferent so that you get out of this experience what you deserve. And hopefully we get to, you know, do something cool too.
Yeah. I'm curious now that as we're recording this, it's, almost 2024. We're December 23 while we're recording it. But I know that Paycor is one of the companies that made a decision to stay remote indefinitely. And you had some answers around what you were doing a couple of years ago, but I'm curious now with 3-4 years of working remotely and so many folks that listen to this, that's a big question we get all the time is how do I lead better remotely? Any best practices specifically in like the last say 18 months or so about how to do that?
You have to do this stuff on relationships, the stuff that everybody just naturally isn't born to do. You will fail doing things remotely, period. Whether it's how you lead, how you're led, how you progress, if you do not get to know your company culture, if you don't participate in it, and if you don't get to know people at work, because it doesn't happen organically anymore. You don't just run into somebody. You don't just randomly see somebody that you've never worked with before wearing the jersey of your favorite team to strike up a conversation. You don't notice that somebody eats the same lean cuisine meal as you every day at lunch. Yeah. It doesn't happen unless you plan for it. So the concept of, you know, when I was in consulting, they used to talk about familiarity, comfort, and trust. Those aren't my words. Those were Global Lead words. That like has to happen in a remote environment. It extremely accelerates good outcomes, and it extremely accelerates personnel shit shows to happen if it doesn't take place. You have to do it.
Yeah, I 100% buy into what you just said. Companies would still try to do like things that just ended up feeling forced and cheesy to try to get people to connect. And I would always say the real connections happen outside of those things. So in a little bit, it feels like to me in the remote world, all you're left with are those sort of, I don't know, things that can feel less than organic and kind of weird and people put their guards up and all this kind of stuff. Tell the world, Paris Parker, that you figured this out. So how do we do intentional online relationship kind of stuff without it feeling like, a cheesy top-down activity.
I have a couple of examples, but I'm going to preface it with this. My current boss says, if you steal from me, you're stealing twice because I stole it from somebody, you know, because essentially you stole it from somebody else. So these are all things. And I am really proud of Paycor employees. So these are not farce ideas, by the way. I just think these are really cool things that work. So One is, you know, our whole thing at Paycor is empowering leaders to build winning teams. This is a true story that happened to me yesterday. I have a people team advocacy council that I meet with once every month, sometimes once a month. And it's a group of people, their whole jobs are to like be the voice of the people team. So what are the things that are happening that people really like aren't saying? What are the things that are important to folks? How do we make people team better so that we can make the broader organization better? And one of the topics that was brought up is, you know, we do so many things at this leadership level and above and people cascade. What if we did something for X group? And the ideas that they had were phenomenal. And I said, I love that. My wish would be, though, that the leaders on the team feel empowered enough to go do that. Because I don't actually think they want to hear from me all the time. Like, I'm kind of boring now. It's like they're leaders that make the difference in their day to day. So that's one example of like, don't wait for somebody on the top to say, we need to bring this group of people together, or we should actually find a time to physically get together and meet on these four business things and then make sure we make time for dinner or make sure we have breakfast together. Don't wait for some leader to say that we're going to do that.
Yeah.
That's one very tactical thing. The other thing is think about the technology that your company uses and how you can use it better. So for example, we use Zoom at work. I wish I knew the physical person that like did this because I would say their name over and over again. I just don't. Somebody had the idea of like, we should have common interest Zoom channels, not employee resource groups, which we have those. And I think those are great and serve a purpose. But we have Zoom channels like serial killer, true crime series. I'm like a top contributor.
It's not
on
teaching
that one.
People to do that. It's not educational.
I mean,
channels.
I guess it depends on what you take away from the documentaries that you watch. I don't know. I'm not here to judge one way or the other. We have one that's called Hooked on Books. We have one that's for recipes. Another one that I'm a frequent flyer, not necessarily contributor on, is the Dad Jokes channel. Like, it's a channel where people are just telling silly jokes all day long. We have one for parents. We have one for twin parents. We have one for Bravo-aholic. I forget what, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And it is trying to replicate some of the more casual connections. Chances are, like, those people are never going to like really see each other in real life. But like, I know the top contributors in the dad jokes.
Yeah.
Zoom channel, and you better believe when I'm in an ERG meeting and I see them, it's like an instant connection of like, yo, the pasta joke. I mean, that was loved it. And that's what begins that building of familiarity and comfort, and then trust over time comes as an outcome of that.
I love that.
So find those things. Like, there's pragmatic things. I hate things when we call things initiatives, but there's like, you know, programs and really methodical things that can be put together. I think we also have to like just loosen up a little bit and be like, where are the people at? What are they using to chat? And how do we make it easy for them to start a Zoom channel? So then, of course, I'm sure I wanted to know how easy it was to start one. My first couple of weeks at Paycor. And so I started one. I like exercising. So I have a 30-day exercise challenge with Paris channel. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning of every month, I post a 30-day image for like different activities you can do every single day. There's no accountability. There's no following up. But people say like, hey, you know, I lost track of day 3 and 4, but I'm all caught up now. Or like, this leg challenge is really killing me. We don't have a lot of dialogue, but like, we're all doing something together and it connects us.
I would say, as we kind of wrap up here, I saw a full circle moment in our conversation where we talked about how sometimes we're afraid to tell the truth because we might upset people. But you also talked about you're specifically actively getting feedback from people. Because I think the flip side of it is, as leaders, sometimes we might not admit it, but we just don't want to hear the bad things. So we have so much stress already. Why would I go ask what's wrong? So I think that goes both ways, right? As we create this culture that is people driven and full of empathy and all those things, but also truth telling, the leaders actively asking for the truth might be the most important thing of all, really.
You have to ask for it. you know, when I really fell in love with what it meant to be in technology back in my 8451 Kroger Digital days, we were going as a company through a transition of becoming product led, right? And the thing that I love about being product led is that it's outcome driven and not task driven. So if you apply that to this dialogue that we're having, if you don't know what's actually wrong, you're spending a whole ton of your life fixing the wrong stuff. I would rather you tell me that the project that we're focused on or the program that we're creating isn't solving the problem and tell me the real problem. Because if I'm going to work this much and if I'm going to rally people in and get them going for so many hours, for so many days a week, I would much rather be working on the stuff that matters. So you have to be, you have to continuously show that you're somebody that not only asks for the feedback, but like wants to hear it and have a dialogue on it. And then you got to do better. You have to do better.
Love it. Paris, thank you for being my friend and being on the podcast. Thank you in advance for any Bengals tickets you'll find for me, because Paycor now has the naming rights to the Cincinnati Bengals Stadium. As a Bengals fan, thank you for helping pay Joe Burrow's contract. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Hooday. No, we actually, the partnership with the Bengals is so awesome and so aligned. You know, when you think about empowering leaders to build winning teams, you know, I love storytelling.
Yes.
How that comes alive in sports is so cool. The Bengals, the Bengals, you know, back office and administrative team and leadership are so phenomenal to work with. I can't wait to see what the next, you know, decade of our relationship will bring. But they're a rockin' crew.
Awesome. Thank you, Paris.
All right, Hooday. Thanks for being my friend too.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
In today's ultra competitive job market, top-tier talent are leaving companies in search of top-tier professional development. Now more than ever, you must invest in your emerging leaders. LeaderCast 365 is a world-class professional development system featuring access to 3 annual LeaderCast events, a post-event journey to activate the inspiration and insights gained from LeaderCast events, plug-and-play lunch and learn programs with group discussion questions, concise video courses to address weaknesses and build upon strengths, and our library of more than 1,200 short-form videos from a slate of industry experts organized into 16 key professional development categories. Invest in your all-star employees and attract new top talent to join them with LeaderCast 365.